My name's Jack. I'm an alcoholic.
Jack.
This was not my plan tonight. Well, I was just talking to Sandy and talking about some things that are going on in my life. And I was laying in bed about an hour ago thinking, man, I hope the speaker cancels so I don't have to go to Feet First tonight. And he calls me and says, I'm going to be there. So I'm thinking, well, I got to come to greet him. And he don't show. And here we are. So I was thinking about my first sponsor years ago. We ran down to Philadelphia and Port Fishington one time. And he was going through a hard time. And he got up at the podium and he was talking about that hard time. And I remember sitting out in the crowd thinking, Chris, what are you doing? We don't do that here. You got to get up there and talk about how good it is. How wonderful life is that I went through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and my life has never been better. And it was probably about 15 years ago, he told me, Jack, don't ever take that podium and not tell the truth. People need to hear where I am. And here we are years later. I'm going to take the podium tonight in that same spot. Wow. One, it's a blessing to even be standing here at Feet First, to be part of this, to see friends, to have the job I have today, to have people in my life that I have. Because I'm one of them guys that God has blessed me on many occasions. And somewhere along the line, self comes back. And I think I know what's best for my life. And I start to chase that. Whether it's money, whether it's her, whether it's new clothes, whether it's an apartment, all the things that I thought were going to fix me. And the things that allowed me to get them things was Alcoholics Anonymous. But while I'm chasing them, I seem to get away from the core that set me free. Free from being tied up in my own head and tortured for years. And with that, the experience is I'm broke, sick, and out of ideas one more time in my life. I think about my experience, and there's not enough hours to sit here and talk about of many occasions of what happened. For years, I thought the way I was raised, where I came from, a broken family. I'm from Philadelphia. Don't hold that against me. You know, I was poor. My dad was never around. I couldn't read or write. I was an illiterate in school. I honestly thought that is what made me the way I was. It took a lot of years, a lot of pain, a lot of heartache to find out that my outside stuff had nothing to do with an internal condition that I suffered from. You know? All I can tell you is my life before I touched a drink was a fantasy. I lived in my head. I was the kid that sat around the table thinking, I just don't fit. It doesn't seem as painful to everyone else as it does for me. To get through a day is torture. You know, I would lay in bed and everybody would go to sleep. And I could still remember looking at the bottom of my brother's bunk bed and my head would just race constantly. Thinking about tomorrow, you know, what I was going to say to this kid or what he was going to say to me or, you know, what I was going to wear and how I was going to look and if this one was going to like me. You know, my life was a fantasy. And, you know, I was that kid that was trying to take my life at a young age. I hated life. I couldn't stand being me. It was painful. You know, and before drinking and other things came along, I was the behavior problem. I acted out in school. I was the class clown. So, of course, I was sent to psychiatrist and put on medication. You know, for years, people have been putting a label on me of what I suffered from and what was wrong with me. And I don't even think the word bipolar was out then, you know. All I can tell you is the day I remember like it was yesterday. You know, in the projects, back then there was mailboxes. There was a mailbox on the corner. It was five of us, a couple quarts of beer and some funny stuff. And I think back to that night, which was a long time ago. I was 17 years old. And, you know, I remember that drink probably did everything, what it should have for everyone that night. But I remember going home and laying in my bunk bed, and something was different. My head didn't torture me. It didn't race. And my outlook was just different. Now, I didn't know at that day I was going to make a decision that no matter what, that's going to come first in my life. I had no idea. It was just for fun. And everybody wanted to do it the next weekend. That's what we talked about. You know, getting some money together and we do it next weekend. You know, I wasn't that kid. You know, I was the kid breaking in cars, stealing change within a month to get my own, to do this alone. I didn't need anyone else. I got relief for the first time in my life. But with that relief came things from my mother, who loved me dearly, saying things like, "What is wrong with you? Where did I go wrong? What could I have done different? Because you're not the son I raised." Now, at that time, at that moment, I'm 18, 19 years old. If love could have gotten me sober, I would be sober today, probably almost 30 years. It cannot touch what I suffer from. It doesn't touch it. Many times, from her looking in my eyes, "You've got to please stop. You're killing yourself." And I'd say, "I promise I'm not going to do it again." As I'm looking in her eyes, and I knew she loved me and I meant it, but I didn't know what I was up against, I couldn't stop it. So it started to stop on things like getting arrested, getting sent to Friends Hospital, going to detoxes, going to rehabs. I had to be stopped. And back then you would go away for 3 months, a month. It isn't like today. And for them 3 months I'd be there, I'd be a great student. You know, I would be in charge of the ward and telling everybody what they need to do. And I was always good with giving advice. I can't follow my own. And it was home. I felt comfortable. I was around people that knew me. They thought like me. They felt like me. We could relate. And every time I was in there, when family would come up, "I'm going to do the right thing." They tell me to go to Alcoholics Anonymous, kid. Put the plug in the jug and go to AA. You're going to be fine. And that's the plan. That's the plan. And the counselor said it. Here's your aftercare plan. And all that stuff's great. But there's one problem. As soon as I hit that word exit, something happens. A fear comes over me that I still today can't describe. A fear that just takes over. Where with all the will that I can muster, swearing, "I'm not going to do that because I'm not going to let these people down again. I'm going to be somebody. I'm going to make something of my life. I'm done." And I last a week. And in them same projects, sitting around with the same guys, doing absolutely nothing, talking about what happened. You know. I think of old tapes, and my mom used to say, "You're just going to be just like your father." And I would say, "I must be just like him. You know, a lot of you know my father's on death row." I thought, well, that's where I'm going to wind up. I'm going to be just like Dad. And that. Today we call it constitutionally incapable of being honest with yourself. That should have a picture of Jack. That's me. That's me. I believe the delusion that my head feeds me. I was talking to Jay about it. The biggest lie is, "I got this." I should have it tattooed on my forehead. I got this. as I'm dying internally, I got this. So there was no teenage years. It was a mess. I come to AA at 22 years old and somehow managed to put a couple years together. I met a beautiful woman. I had some beautiful kids. And I was able to do some things I never thought I could do. Get out of projects, buy a home. Here I am again, chasing things. You know, money, property, and prestige is going to fix me. Them kids lasted for a little while. The newness wears off. Being married lasted for a while. The newness wore off. You know, none of that stuff seemed to work. You know, it's like my whole life I'm quick out of the gate, but halfway through the race I just fizzle. I fail. I wanted to make that the end, and I just can't. I'm well on my way, and head takes over, and I go. But what are you going to think about me when I tell you I'm not doing too good? You know, I can't do that, because I suffer with this thing called an ego that mine tries to kill me on a daily basis. I was thinking about it at work today, that I have more people around me that love and care about me than I've ever had in my life. And I never felt so alone. I just said to Sandy, my head wants me drunk, but it'll settle for me being miserable. So with that started some years of in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I know there's people that hate to hear people talk about in and out in AA. Please let me tell you, it has nothing to do with Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous runs just perfect when you do what it asks. When you do what it asks. When I take all their suggestions. You know. Problem is, I come in AA and I got it. And I'm going to do things my way. You know, I wound up putting a few years together and I left here. And everything that I put together left. Children left. Wife left. Friends left. Jobs were gone. You know. All that stuff that I tried to fix was gone. And for years, I walked around lost. You know, I don't know if anybody's got to a place, I'll tell you, it's pretty lonely, to get to a spot to come into AA and they're even done with you. People get tired. You know, they put a lot of hard work into coming in and calling you and making sure how you're doing and picking you up and buying you cigarettes and getting you a meal. You know, totally selfless. And you got a guy like me that's just going around sucking the life out of people. And eventually, at the end, you're alone. You're alone. The big book talks about a loneliness like no other that we get to experience. All them years I've been in and out of AA, I've never opened a big book. Never. I don't want to say and be ignorant and say they weren't talking about it. You know, I don't believe that. I believe for a lot of years I had ears that couldn't hear and eyes that couldn't see. And it was right in front of me. You know. It got to the point in my life I liked myself better polluted. So I'd get a little time sober and I'd come in AA and I would stay here until I couldn't stand this no more. And I'd run back out there and do the same thing over and over and over. And I'd look over my shoulder and another decade of my life is gone. And everything I loved and cherished in my life has vanished. Has vanished. It's gone. How do I say to them kids? Kids, I love you guys. I want to be your dad. But I can't stand what I feel like sober. How do you say that? Or tell my 29-year-old daughter who struggles today that I really can't help you. Because I refuse to come to AA and do what I'm asked. Because God has put so many people in my life to help. And I won't take their hand. So August 9th of last year, I'm lost. I'm homeless in Philadelphia. I got nowhere to go. I'm on a run like no other. Like no other. I remember walking around in the street, a Benner Street. I got a cigarette butt I just picked up. I lit it. At a moment it wasn't mine. I said, call Ricky. Now, I had experience with these people before. You remember, I was part of this great thing that happened here at Feet First. This marvelous thing that happened 10 years ago, almost today. It was the most amazing experience of my life. For 5 years, my feet did not touch the ground. And I disappeared. I look back at that experience. And step two says, I must come to believe in a power greater than myself, only power greater than me, to fix what I suffer from. And I'm here to tell you, my voice and God's voice sounds a lot alike in my head. I think it's God. And it's the delusion what Jack's doing. And I ran around and I got the privilege of helping some men. But I tell you, the day will come when it's only you and God. And it even came through something different, you know, a relationship. I don't need that AA. You know, I'm good. Look at my life. And it grabbed me by the throat and took me again. So August 9th, last year, I had that moment. I was on my way to work and paranoid. I'm losing my mind. I don't know who I am. I think people are chasing me through my cell phones. I can't watch TV because they're coming. They're looking for me. I was insane. And I had that moment. And I made that call and that. And she said, call this lady. And I called a woman in Quakertown. And she said, listen, you're in bad shape. Please go in the hospital. And I said, today, even with the guys that work with me, one of the best words I can ever say is okay. Most spiritual word I can say, okay. You know, whether I agree with it or I don't, it has no, my opinion don't matter, okay. And I went. And I was losing my mind from bath salts. And I stayed there. I stayed there because I was broke. When I'm full of fear, when I'm broken, when there's nowhere to go and there's no one left, I'll do whatever you want me to do. Whatever you want me to do, I'll do. I follow direction well. I say okay a lot. I just do. So I stayed there and then I went into this house, which I believe is why I'm here today, because I went in that house. I didn't want to go in that house. I couldn't afford it. You know, I'm going to stay in Philly. I burn all my bridges up there. Nobody wants me. But I went. It's like every time I really humble myself, things seem to work well. Every time I seem to get out of the way and go off of what someone else tells me, things work really well. So I got there August 11th of last year. And there was nothing really going on. You know, my schedule was clear. There was a whole lot of nothing going on. You know, walking back in here to feet first, you know, took a lot of courage. It's not easy to come back here. It's not easy to look at guys and you feel like you let them down. The cool thing is, and the most beautiful thing is, most of the people that are in this home group understand what I suffer from. They don't take it personal. You know, I got to meet some great friends. I started going to big book meetings at the house. Some folks entered my life back when I was here last time, and they're like family to me. I wound up in their life again, and God gave me a little job. And I think it was 6 months in a recovery house. I was asked to move back to the same place I lived 6 years prior. I'm back at the same job I was at 8 years ago. Here it is, God at work again, one more time. Like if I'd have sat a year ago and said, this is where my life's going to be in a year, I would have never believed it. But I hear in my head, don't get too well too quick. So things on the outside look nice. I just said the bigger my bank account gets, the more miserable I'm getting. And here's the truth. The truth is, the hopeless variety alcoholic that the big book talks about, I will not survive. I will not survive. Trials and low spots. I won't survive them. And now, I always come in and think, well, you know, I know what step one's about. I know what the doctor's opinion talks about. I know I have an allergy. I know when I touch that stuff, my life is none of my business. I get that every time I touch that stuff, I can't stop hurting everybody. I get all that. That means absolutely nothing if I don't run with this thing. So for the last 6 months, what's my life look like? I'm chasing money. I'm working. Oh, and sleeping. AA has become second again in my life. I didn't do it purposely. I didn't wake up one day and go, AA is going to be second again. I didn't wake up today and go, I don't feel like taking anybody's call in AA today. Guys like James and Ron and Jay and Ricky, like people that keep calling me and keep reaching out. Now, so it's happening again. I'm here to tell you, I'm not doing what the book's asking me. Just not drinking is not good enough for me. I just said to Nick before the meeting, I don't know what's worse, being drunk or untreated alcohol. Like, it's horrible, you know. As I walk in my room every night and the big book sits there, the answer is right there, and I don't pick it up. I lay in bed and think, well, it might have been a good idea if I prayed tonight. I'm too tired. I'll do that in the morning. I talk to Ron. It's a good idea. You come Thursday. I'll come next Thursday. Someone said to me the other day, Jack, God gave you a gift. He blessed you with a gift to be able to sit with one alcoholic helping another for one sole purpose, to help them, for my heart to connect with his. Why aren't you using it? Why aren't you using it? That's where the freedom is. You know, that's where the freedom is. I felt it. But yet I can't get out of my own way. And I've never been here before. It's new. My head produces, I'll be 50 years old in a couple days. You destroyed everything you loved. It's gone. The puzzle wasn't supposed to look like this, man. It was supposed to be different. Good intentions isn't good enough. Don't they know I'm a good guy? You know, I'm a good guy in my heart. Really didn't mean to do them things. My disease, it doesn't matter. You know, it happens. It's none of my business. You know, came to believe in a power greater than myself. I think about relationships I miss with my kids and grandkids and brother and sister. Someone said the relationship that I need the most is one with God. You know, because that's where the freedom is here. Am I using this book like only the dying should? No. No. And I guess I'm just saying that to let you guys know. I don't know if I can study the book a little more. Maybe I can learn some new things. But that's not the answer neither. Just knowing the book means nothing. Just knowing some information means nothing for me. It don't come alive until I'm sitting with you and I'm trying to pass it on. Or I'm sitting around like-minded people feeling charged up about life. That's when it works. So here I am, a little over a year sober again, restless, irritable, and discontent. And I think I'm hiding it pretty well. With the quote, I got this. My experience shows that there's nothing that'll work in my life but this big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Nothing. I've tried it all. If there was one more thing, I would have tried it, but there isn't any. It's the only thing that's given me relief from me. Where I'm not full of fear, where I'm not full of resentment, where I'm not full of blaming everybody. It's everyone else's fault. You know, don't you understand? I'm here because of them. You know, I understand all my problems are of my own making. I get that. But just knowing it means nothing. You know, God has blessed me to have some good people in my life that live this way, and they try to live this way to the best of their ability. And I sit with men and I think, how can you do that with him, but yet you won't do this for yourself with somebody? I haven't figured that out. The harder I try, the worse matters get. You know, the line in the book where it talks about how to quit playing God, it didn't work. You know, as long as everybody would stay put, you know, as long as my arrangements are where I want them, whether it was my kids, my wife, my parents, my job, my life would be well, you know. That don't work, because that's a lot of work, getting people to live by my will. So I feel like I tried all that. And none of it worked. My head's going, well, that stuff don't work anyway. You know? I have a room in an attic upstairs. Beautiful home. It's my home. They treat me like it's mine. I lay in that bed and I think, if I could bottle this and sell it to people, for them to understand, this is the end. This is what that life gives you. Lonely, painful, regrets, remorse. If I could just bottle that up and say, man, stop now while you can. Here's the answer. Just do what they're asking. Because it's horrible. It's horrible. I didn't know I was making a decision that day to give everyone a lot. I loved the way. I didn't know. And just because we come in and get sober and we do this work, you know, we try to make amends and make things right, it don't mean they come back. It don't mean everyone forgives. And I found myself lately getting caught in morbid reflection. If I would have only done this different. If I would have only done what that sponsor asked me to do. Maybe, just maybe, things won't be the way they are. I think that about a lot of things. I had the best buddy I went around with. I live in his house and I think, man, if he had maybe, just maybe, done what he should, we could be going through this together right now. He was the only one I felt that understood. He was the only one that knew. But with all that said, I know the opposite is if I do what this thing's asking me, whether they forgive me or not, whether they come back in my life or not, it really isn't going to matter because I'll be okay. I will be all right with it, you know? I was talking to Jeff tonight about the speaker not coming. I was all uptight. He went, Jack, we ceased fighting everything and everyone. It just is. It's okay. But when self is in there, driven by fear, driven by an unhappiness, I take it personal. I start to take things real personal. And I have no idea why I'm up here. I don't. Maybe it's just one person hear what I'm saying, because it doesn't. You don't have to experience what I have. You know, it's so not worth it. I was thinking, I get up in the morning and think, you know, God, I offer myself to you. Within 5 minutes, I'm wrapped up in self. I'm not making calls. I'm getting lost in work. You know, stay busy. Our good friend Dave Perry says, you got the case of busies? You know, I think of that all the time in my head. The case of busies, Jack. You aren't too busy when you get out of detox. And maybe this is, I don't know. Maybe this is God's plan for getting you kick-started again. I do know that if I do what the book asked, I get relief from this. I do. I understand that. I was talking to a guy the other day. I said, I don't know what's worse, someone that don't know anything about AA or someone that has some information like me And I think that God has some information like me is worse off. Because I think, I know what to do here. But I don't. I really don't. You know? Just not put one drink, one drug in my body for 24 hours is not the solution for me. It's a beginning. It's truly a beginning. It allows me to be a part with you guys. But there's so much more. You know, the program itself. You know, what does my immense list look like? I'm looking at Ron. It's nuts. He's sitting there. The last time I sat with any kind of step work, and this is being honest with you guys, was sitting in St. Paul's Church many, many months ago with a fourth step. And we did a fifth and no amends. No amends. No meditation. No quiet time. No constant thought of others. But yet I'll lay in bed and go, why am I out of my mind? Why am I crazy? You know, and I'm just putting on the show. I don't know, guys. I put on a show my whole life. My whole life. It's been a show. Painful show. It's like being a chameleon our whole life, to fit in, to act with, to be a part of. Talks about the show doesn't come off very well. The show is not coming off too well. If there's anyone sitting here that even has come close, that believes they're a hopeless variety alcoholic, where your head tortures you, where it won't leave you alone, where you don't feel okay inside, grab someone, man. Grab someone. Say, I can't do this, because I'm going to hear tell you, I'm almost 50, and I'm not doing this thing called life too well. Not at all. God has given me the answer. It's right here. And I need to take some action with it now. Because I want to be here with you guys. I want to stay with you guys. I want to be part of this. I want my friends that I can grow older with and be part of my life. Instead of my same old experience. Burn that bridge and leave town. Burn that bridge and leave town. New set, new town, new set of friends. New town, new set of my whole life. I just want the show to end. And I guess God putting me up here tonight allowed me to be vulnerable. And I know from experiences when I'm vulnerable is when God can work. You know. For those of you who haven't given up on me, thank you. For those of you who are sitting here thinking you've been at this so long and it ain't worth it, welcome. I know where you're at. For those of you who are going to leave here tonight and go get it in, I know where you're at too. Say something to somebody, because I've done it 1,000 times. We don't know where you're at unless you tell us where you are. And that is probably the biggest telling on myself I've ever done is tonight. AA is the best gig in town, man. And for a guy like me, this is it. You know, we know it's the last house on the block where nobody wants us. But it's the best house on the block, too. You know? It's the most happening block when you're plugged in and you're on fire and you're running around with the guys and you're going to speaking commitments and you're going to detoxes and you're helping others. I know what that's like. It's a feeling that nothing can come close to. It's just not that easy like it used to be to pop right back into it. You know, it gets harder. I fade away and it gets harder to get back into it. We're just talking about our friend tonight with Paul, very good friend of ours, who's part of this. Can't even make it to the meeting. And that's all I have.